Good morning. I stupidly printed this out in like 6-point type, so bear with me. So Connie is a proud graduate of East High School, go Scarlets. She then attended Des Moines Area Community College and Grandview University. Once she entered the workforce, she had a career as a buyer for Yonkers department store here in Des Moines. Today, in addition to serving the people of Des Moines, Connie continues to own and operate Appalicious and Salad Bowl concession business, which are favorites of the Iowa State Fair. Connie continues to live in the east side of Des Moines, where she lives with her husband, Ted. Connie has dedicated much of her life to public service. She first got involved at the school board from 2003 to 2017. Then in 2017, she was elected to an at-large city council position. And in 2023, Connie was the first female mayor elected to the city of Des Moines. Yay! So, I met Connie a year ago this November, and we were working on a project out at Prairie Meadows for a week, and she is the Energizer Bunny, and the election had just rolled up, and the phone never stopped ringing. And I thought, okay, she just needs to staple it to the side of her head, because it's never going to stop. So she is all about our city. She's all about helping anyone who calls and asks for help. So please welcome Mayor Connie Bozen.
Well, thank you, Joe, for inviting me. Yes, I met you a year ago, and it was an interesting time. My brother-in-law's do decoration for Prairie Meadows, and I kind of took it over about 15 years ago. So keep doing it. I do laugh because the one question I got asked the most after I got elected, are you still doing Appalicious? And I go, well, yeah, I'm just the mayor. So we did continue Appalicious. I'm just recovering from the Iowa State Fair and the 20-hour days. So, but again, thank you for having me. What a great crowd. There's a lot of people here. So what's happening in Des Moines? I think some really great things. Yes, we have challenges, but we have so many opportunities. And some of my key priorities when I first got elected was economic development, youth support, and addressing the mental health crisis that we see in Des Moines. So those have been some of my key priorities throughout the time. And as far as economic development, not only does it provide our residents with jobs, places to dine, recreate, but new housing opportunities. But it's the engine that really drives the growth of our community. And I believe we've got to focus on regenerating what we have. We've got to make sure that every piece of property in this city has value. And I'm not saying gentrification, I'm just saying it has to have value. We need to fill in the empty lots, and we need to, whatever space we have, make it what it should be. And I think if you want to go forward, one of our highlights, too, will be in the Market District. It's a great opportunity of land that was all public works, the rundown buildings that we own, that is now going to be transformed. And I know that a lot of you live downtown, so the housing downtown is a way we recreate downtown Des Moines. And these are some of the new apartments that are going in. So the Aston Apartments are the Heart of America's group. It's over on the east side, and it'll be transforming. It's a $44 million project. Tempo Apartments is another apartment complex of 110 units, and it's a $20 million project. And some of those projects that are developing by Heartland, the one that the Tempo, they're poured concrete, they are solid, and they've already rented half of them. And so it's a huge indication that people still want to live downtown. We have Gray Station that's going to continue, and then the transformation of Rouen 2 into housing. And then the Union at River's Edge is a $56 million project. It's 216 units of affordable housing, and that's like on East First. So again, getting a blend of housing, and one of the components is within each housing complex is usually some affordability built in if you do receive dollars. So again, trying to figure out how we recreate and rebuild. We know that office space is still challenging, But we just talked to a developer, one of the real estate people, said they've had more action in the last year than they've seen in a very, very long time. We feel very comfortable that things are going to keep happening. I think in some cases, this was like the Market District where we're waiting for that to really take off. But if you want to go on forward too, some of the new things that are coming on throughout the whole city. So I think you can see there's a variety of new development going on, whether it be eating or the pickleball courts, which I guess are doing really well. How many play pickleball? There's a couple. It's a hot little item. So I think we're trying to, again, and a Merle Hay Mall that has tried to recreate, they're still having some difficulty because of what happened with the Bucks, but I think she's still trying to come up with other methods to redevelop that area and make it a very valuable piece of property and continue the growth. And even from small business like Nadia's French Bakery, something new to the Des Moines area that I think, again, shows how do we support small businesses. And one of the things when I was running for office, I ran into some people who were trying to get a business open. And not to say that Des Moines is complicated in their permitting, but I guess it is. So I said we need to find somebody in our economic development that will help shepherd a small business owner through the process. And so they ended up shifting a position and hired two people to do that. And it's already shown a difference in impact for people coming in. Because when you're a small business, like I opened up an Appalachian store once, and I'm like, you're trying to be the master of all. But to get through the permitting process and all the complications and what you need to do, we have somebody now that can help people get through that process and get open. Because I always said, a day you're not open is a day you're not doing business. And in small business, you need every day of business. So again, trying to help support the businesses that are coming. So the next is the 6th Avenue. I think everybody, if you've driven down 6th Avenue, you've seen the transformation. And all the Center at 6th, the innovative project that's going on there. So again, not only is it from university, but if you go all the way down, you see what's happening up at Highland Park. And to me, it's what we're all about. How do you get, and it's really because of small businesses, you said we want to make a difference. And for the people in Highland Park who stayed true to their core, who the Highland Park Hardware, Bill Wheeler and Chuck's and those places that said we're going to keep this thing alive and we're going to keep it going. And it's, like I say, it's the hot new area of Des Moines. And Lachelle's is going up there. You see all the new other little businesses that opened up. So it's a great statement, again, to the wherewithal of people who want to make a difference and how you can still be successful in small business and create an area that was once vibrant, even to more vibrancy. And that's just showing the difference of when you do a different streetscape. And really, a lot of the streetscapes are to slow people down and to make it more safe for transportation and for biking and more walkability. So that's really when you see the narrowing of roads. All we hear about is speed. Every neighborhood meeting, which I have the opportunity to go to, I think there's 49 now, is about speed. And so I just tell everybody, just slow down. I mean, slow down. So this is a mechanism to help do that. Plus, it beautifies the streetscape. And so, again, just show the before and after, what can happen when you transform a streetscape. And Ingersoll's the other one, where we have done, now it's been under construction a long time. I think there was an article, the Fluid Drive is getting done, so Ingersoll could probably go in that category. Wow. But I think we're not just doing the road, we're doing the storm sewers, we're doing all the repairs and things at the same time. So yes, it seems like a long time, but I say, when I first was on city council, all I heard about was potholes. So I'm like, I don't want to hear about roads being under construction. We're trying to get the roads done. It was a huge undertaking, but because of the sales tax, which we want to thank all the citizens for passing, it's given us the opportunity to really do more with our roads. And yes, we still have a lot more to do. But again, the Ingersoll streetscape, again, business is long there. Some people on the traffic, but again, it's a beautiful roadway. Some activity that's going on the south side is Southridge Mall. Genesis Sports Complex is redoing a complete gym. And then you see different apartments, cranes, Starbucks, and some senior housing going on at Southridge. Again, how do you redevelop an old mall and make it more vibrant? And InvestDSM is a program that was started about 4 years ago, and I guess 5 years ago. And it really is not, it was meant to bring about value increase and to get people to stay in their neighborhood, invest in their neighborhood. It was not to be an affordable housing project. It was to say, we will go in and help rebuild houses. So the house up here is the one on 31st and Cottage Grove that was moved over from Drake, had an old house. We moved it over and totally retrofitted, kept the historic significance. And if anybody went through that open house, the phenomenal house. And there's a house, a door down to it that we, InvestDSM, did. Again, rebuilding neighborhoods. The house with the blue is a one in Highland Park that we did with, I believe it was Home Inc. or one of the people. And but that's an ADU unit in the back. Again, we have said that in Get to More Housing, people could add ADU units. So this was a way to show how you could do that. We haven't had a lot of interest in it, but again, we have the ability to do it. So again, transforming neighborhoods. We have a neighborhood in the Drake area that we've purchased all the homes to transform and keep the historical significance. And while some are getting transferred into single-family houses, there's maybe an 18-unit going on Kingman. So again, rebuilding more multiple places, not just a single family. But we have found people have stayed, especially Waveland Park, the money that people have invested on their own is like 3 to 1 to what we've put in. People are building on, staying in their homes, not moving to outside Des Moines to find the bigger house. And so we are seeing great input into that. So there's four areas of Des Moines. There's Columbus Park, Highland Park, and that's what helped start the business part, and then Waveland Park, and now Drake, and we're expanding it to Woodland Heights in this area too, and north of Grand. Again, so the goal of it is to help build the investment people have in their homes and stay in their homes. And I think it was 167 projects in 2023, and it's an investment of over $6.5 million. Of course, we're all waiting for this to get done. The airport terminal, again, a huge undertaking. Again, it will be a huge economic driver. And it will be great for us to have more direct flights. So more gates, probably the where you go through security will be much better. Again, it just brings about a whole new attitude because we are, for the state of Iowa, it's a great amenity. So again, looking forward to that getting done. It should be great to, I think it's a few years away. I think the entrance is closed right now or something, so get there early. The next item is the Southeast Connector Project. We received the largest award we ever had from the Department of Transportation, $34 million. And if you don't know where that area is, the MLK Road all the way out past the fairgrounds to Pleasant Hill. This connector is huge for the eastern Polk County. To get to, and hopefully then we'll take some of that truck traffic off of University, and it will also be able to, where we'll be able to develop, I think there's, I don't know how many acres, like hundreds of acres down in the southeast area where off of Vandalia Road, that never would have been developed if this road wouldn't go through. And it's a great connector, too, to the bypass, Highway 65. So again, it was a huge award. It got us over the top, so that will be proceeding. And it's a great way of working together with the city of Pleasant Hill to say how can we do more and create areas that literally nobody would have developed in. So that's where the bus garage is going to be going to. So it's time up. The bus garage is relocating there because their facility down off of Southwest 9th is in, I think they had 20 feet of water in it during the flood in 1993. So it's not an adequate piece of property for really helping take care of the buses. So part of the land will go there. Again, Second Avenue, if you've been along Second Avenue, is another major reconstruction. And again, when it gets done, it will be great, but it's painful right now. Rebuild both of those bridges, and they're redoing that whole Central Place levee. Again, they'll put a bike trail along it, and that's what they're trying to do with a lot of the levees, make them very useful for biking. And if you're bikers, you know we have a great trail system. And so youth support. if you want to. When we had the ARPA dollars, I have always been a strong proponent of preschool. From the time I was on school board, I advocated. We were able to give, like it says, $3.3 million, and we're given another $292,000. They were able to open up 6 preschool classrooms, but the component that was so critical was a wraparound daycare. It is a workforce issue. It's an academic issue. When we saw the numbers that they showed us from the pre to the post of that 1 year, why we don't pass, you know, universal preschool, not only just the 10 hours a week, but for worker, you know, anybody in poverty should have an all-day program. They went from 30% proficient to 98%. Half of the kids entering Des Moines Public Schools when I got on school board in 2003 did not have preschool. Half of the kids that entered Des Moines Public Schools kindergarten do not have preschool. So when you talk about making an academic difference, for every dollar invested in preschool, it is saved $17 down the road in remediation and all the different things that come with not having the proper things to get started. So again, we were proud to support it. I think it showed that you can do it, and if you do invest, it's very worthwhile. So again, we don't have the dollars to continue, but once the kids got enrolled, now state money starts coming. But again, it's only 10 hours, and then Des Moines Schools gives 15. But we will continue to work with the Des Moines Schools in a greater way to promote and help them, because quite honestly, I ran for school board because I believe schools are critical to the city, and I ran for city council because I believe that the city, some of the actions they were taking were impacting schools. We have to work together. Strong schools make strong communities. So that's one way. We also gave money to programs for youth employment over the summer. We gave 3 different groups, Boys and Girls Club, Urban Dreams, and Oak Ridge, money to get kids over the summer. And I think some of them, it lasted for like 2 years, they were able to stretch it out to give them, you know, that 14, 15-year-old that have trouble finding jobs. So they were able to give them employment, because when you see the uptick in violence, sometimes it's because kids just need money. And they need to have activity. So keep them out of trouble, keep them busy. So again, I think those programs worked well. Again, I'm very proud of our whole park system. There's a huge master plan for Birdland to transform the Birdland Park Marina. I think it's about $50 million, little details, but at least we have the plan, we have the way, and especially with the Icon Water Trails. This, to me, is the catalyst even for the Icon Water Trails. This would be where a lot of people would enter in and interact with the water in a greater way. So we're trying to figure out ways to get the funding for that. The Birdland Park is being renovated. They're putting foosball courts and different things and renovating that whole park where the pool is. Again, we have an award-winning park system, and I think we're just going to continue to, like the Grays Lake, everybody knows about, you know, the paddle board, different things that are going to go in there. Again, very proud of the work that Ben Page and his team do. We just did the rocket slide at Union Park, brought that back around. A huge investment, hard to find the parts, but they were able to do it. And you saw the kids there and just the enjoyment and just the ability to provide recreation for kids and continue to build that program. Another way we worked with the park system is there's a program that if you have good attendance at school, you get to you get awarded different swimming free and different things like that. We also have for sports, we lowered the entry fee to $5. They went from like a couple hundred kids in football to 700. It was a barrier at $35 and $50, so we lowered it to $50. And then the Parks Foundation gives a ball to every child, whether it be soccer ball, baseball, football, in part of the program. So they can practice afterwards, because some of them didn't have that. So again, trying to say, how do we help the youth in throughout our various programs? This is the Reichart Community Center that's going to be a phenomenal building. The plans are done. I think it's supposed to break ground in October. And it will be where the Grub Y is. So it's a replacement to the Grub Y. And then we will take it over as a recreation center. And the amenities in it, the planning that was done by the community was very intensive. I think they even picked out the colors to go in. So, but I look forward to having that done. It'll be a great amenity to that neighborhood. And then we have one of the other things when I first got onto was how do we advance the mental health issues that we have. We had a care program, and we had one officer. And I'm like, we need more than Lorna Garcia, who is phenomenal. So we developed the mobile integrated health care program is one that just started in 2022. There's what we call the frequent callers. So through our EMTs, they are literally going to meeting with every one of these frequent callers because sometimes they just need medicine. Sometimes it was like they need to go to the doctor's office. We would get emergency 911s to go to the doctor's office. Again, very expensive mode to travel. So they are literally going door to door, talking to people on what their need is and how they can get them the help to take care of those needs. They have served 80 individuals since they started in April, or since April of this year. And it was substance abuse, mental health, individuals with chronic medical needs, transportation, mobility needs. So again, trying to address the needs of people. And the care program is where Lorna was involved. So now we have two officers trained, highly trained in mental health. Plus we have a whole team that we work with, Broadlawn's Medical Center, of advocates that go out. In fact, I saw it yesterday. I was at a stop and it was... I saw the police officers along with the crisis person helping somebody. So again, try to lead possibly with the social worker or the crisis team. And if you need backup, then you have the police. So that and so we know that some people, when they show up with an officer, it's not the best. So we're trying in the 911 center too. There's a call provider that will determine the situation. If they believe that only the crisis team needs to go out, they'll send the crisis team out, but if they believe they need to have an officer go out to make sure it's secure, because we don't want anything to happen to people, then they'll make that determination. But they actually have a specialist in the call center primarily during the day, but to help direct how the people are doing it so that we get the proper help. And again, with I see Matt here in Polk County, something that just got opened, the New Life Service Center. And it is great because it's a sobering center, and then the mental health crisis team from Broadlands will be housed there too. Again, get people the help they need. There was only alternative is if you're walking and you're intoxicated or high or whatever, you're going to jail. Now you can go here, get detox, hopefully then have more conversation on how we can help you, and the crisis team will be there too from Broadlands. And so again, and on the other side of it will be what I don't know if we, what's the official name, Matt? The Welcoming Center for Immigrants and Refugees. To give people the help that have been in this country, even when you have talked to people who have been here 3, 4, 5 years, they still, the language barrier, the issues that they're facing, to get them the help that they need, to get them to the services they need and find and help people. So again, Polk County has been a tremendous partner with the City of Des Moines on coming up with ways to help people. And that's really what it's all about. How do we make this community the best it can be? Yes, we need the economic development, but we need to take care of people too. So with that, I'll end it. And if anyone has questions, and thank you for your time. Neil? Oh, sorry.
I don't know if the mic is.
You can't talk yet.
Thank you, Mayor. When the city completes moving to Midtown in the insurance building, there will be some historic buildings on the east side of the river. What's going to happen to those? And you might include any remarks about the soon-to-be vacant federal courthouse. What's going to happen to that?
Opportunity, yes. So for Des Moines, the Armory Building, I believe the Des Moines Performing Arts has made a proposal to take that one over. When you come to the City Hall, we have put out a request on what people would bring forward, and it will be very tight on what will happen there. It's way too beautiful of a building to be an office. I mean, if you've been in that building, is phenomenal. So it will be of historic significance. I believe it's a great art opportunity, a great for the arts. That's my idea, but we'll see what comes forward. Police station eventually will be coming open. People have already gone through it, looking at hotel opportunities. But with a police station, we're talking all that land around it, too. So, again, adds to the market district. So along the whole river could be an arts facility. I mean, and really bring the public in to use these buildings. My thing is the city hall, too, should be open. And how do we activate these buildings? Because they're beautiful pieces of architecture, not so efficient for offices today. But I think we have an opportunity to do some great things with it. And nationwide offering, just to give some numbers, across the street there is a development that was awarded in the empty parking lot. About, I think, maybe 3, 4, 5 years ago, it was proposed to put the IT, anything that was in the armory over there. It was a cost of $36 million, so I think for $40 million we got the nationwide building, 300,000 square feet instead of 100, and a parking garage. So, yes, it's going to cost money to retrofit it, but it activates and it takes 300,000 square feet off the market. It'll activate downtown even in a greater way. And so I think it's a win for everybody, for us as a city, to bring all of our people together finally, because they've been kind of spread throughout, and be a much more efficient. And for people to, even if you want to do your tickets or whatever, you need dog license, you'll be able to do it off the skywalk, off the first floor. So it'll be, I think, a great opportunity. But again, we're very cognizant of the historical significance and want to maintain it.
Connie, the City Council is currently contemplating legislation that some, including the ACLU of Iowa, have characterized as criminalizing homelessness. How would you characterize this legislation, and what is being done, and what more can be done to get people off the streets and into affordable housing?
First is that it's an ordinance, and we have proposed, we had a $50 fine. I said, it's not the fine. It's never been about the fine. So let me start first. We know we have an issue. We see it. I mean, you all see it. And when you go into some of the camps, how that is criminal that people are living that way. So we are not criminalizing homelessness. We're criminalizing, if you want to say criminalizing, because we could fine you for camping. So the deal is to get compliance. And because we now have 10 days and the amount of money we have put into cleaning up camps, and some are abandoned, some have because we have said your 10 days are up, but when it costs $300,000 in the last few months, we could much more proactively put that somewhere else. There is room in shelters. I realize people don't want to go to congregate. So what we're trying to do is get compliance and get people the help. Everybody wants more affordable housing. Tell me how you build it. Tell me how you build affordable housing without huge subsidies and how long it's going to take to find the places. We have a lot of affordable housing in Des Moines. We have, Anawam has, I think, 700 units. We have a lot, but do we need more? Yes. And that's why the place on East First, we're talking, there's some proposals going on finding more supportive housing. Just housing people is not the answer when they can't be housed. We had it during COVID. There was $500,000 damage. I think, I can't remember the hotel. So what we have proponents that are saying, you have a lot of housing first, but now I'm hearing from people say you have to help people before you can house them. And we've got to figure out how to help the people to make sure that when they get into housing, they are able to stay in the housing. So it's multifaceted, but we are looking at 3 or 4 other projects, but we believe that everybody has opportunity to do more, but we've got to get people off the streets and into safer shelter than where they're at right now. The shooting that happened off of Southeast 14th and Harriet was an argument between campers, because there's a hierarchy in these camps, and somebody didn't want to follow the rules, and so he pulled a gun and shot one of the other campers. It's a unique system, and some people want to be outside, and I get that, but there's places that when you go down on the library and you see people camping, and when you go down on Southwest 9th and somebody has a pit bull that about attacks another person walking by, those are things, that's a behavior we can't have in the city. I had somebody that's my neighbor who is at a grade school on the east side. A camper was in behind a private business, and when they went, the private business went to clean it up, there was needles, syringes, and we're talking on the fence line of a grade school. So it's a double action. We do not, in the ordinance, is no, there's no jail. There's, if you can't pay it, the you it gets waived. We just want compliance. And in most cases, when you talk about compliance, most people do comply. But they know that we had a woman in a park, which is, you can't camp in a park, say, you can't do anything to me, I know I have 10 days. And was throwing rocks at the people mowing, not little rocks, but the people mowing was having rocks thrown at him. So again, that person needed help. The woman over on the bridge, under the bridge that everybody saw, probably she got committed. Again, but part of our program is we gave directives to the manager, we will not do the ordinance until these things are done. And one of us for outreach workers. And we've had a very generous donor pay for a year of the four outreach workers. So we believe they will go first, because sometimes people just need to know where they get Medicaid or their Medicare or their Social Security, or that they could go to the VA. They just need to know where to go. And so those outreach workers will make the first contact and try to work with the people to get them to comply and tell them probably what the new rules were, and try to get them to the help they need or get them into shelter. And now the shelter used to send a believe people out during the day, and supposedly they're letting people stay. Again, we've got to give people a place to sit, to sleep, and safe during the day too. So working with other groups, working with other agencies on how we can improve it, because what is happening, not taking any action, is criminal. To let people live in those kind of conditions, and we might not fix it, and it could take 2 years for some people, we get it. But we also have had the issue of people coming from other areas, and I got a little trouble because I mentioned Waterloo, and I didn't say that they sent them, but there is an agency literally bringing people in to Des Moines. I'm just saying they need to take care of their problems too, of where they haven't provided for their citizens, if they are, because people are saying, we don't know why we're here. We got put in a van. We have in this shelter too, just to say what else we've done, we've embedded our EMTs are there from 8 in the morning till 11 at night. They got, you know, where the downtown station is 200 yards, they would get calls for 911. And they're going, this is crazy. We're sending our apparatus down 200 yards. They'd get there and they needed medicine, or they hadn't taken their pills, or they hadn't. So they are embedded, and they're doing, and they have cut those calls 70% in the first 3 months. Again, but seeing what's going on and talking with the people and understanding more of their needs, the EMTs are glad to be there because they feel they're helping. And again, we're seeing how we can help in a better way. But again, we are trying to be as proactive as we can to give them the help. And we're looking at possibly a place for pilot homes, which is a temporary housing for people. Primarily, I prefer that it would be geared to where it would be. It would be women's and children, seniors, and maybe the LGBTQ young people, to separate, you know, from the congregate setting. Because I think some people, they just can't go into that, and we understand that. So we are, and we can get that up and going in a pretty short time, at just where you get the funding. Everything takes money and time and money. But again, trying to be proactive, but say, we just want compliance. We're not here to criminalize anyone. That's not the makeup of this council.
When the donor's money runs out, do you envision the city having the money to continue the program with these social workers that are going out there helping?
Well, we have Operation Downtown that's stepping in, so we know we have 2 years. And then hopefully, unfortunately, what we're all facing, all the cities are facing, is the new property tax law is not to our benefit. They've capped growth and really said that we don't want growth, right? I mean, we have a 4.1% increase in value, and we got cut to 2.1. So again, we need to work on our legislative side too. And then one thing too is working with the state, we've had conversations with the state on the homeless. And so they are, if we have some projects, they are willing to listen, and we will be taking maybe a couple forward to say what can we do to help, knowing that we're in need of and willing to help, but we need help from not, like Polk County's been great, but we also need the state to step forward. And really, when it gets down to, you know, you say throughout the country, people have been in Denver, you go to Portland, whatever, why is it so many? Yes, it's the cost of housing, but it's also the lack of mental health help. And that has been, I think we have one mental health institute in Iowa now, Cherokee. I come from Clarinda, where we had one. And I'm not saying maybe they were run correctly, but some people just need longer-term care to get their meds right or whatever it is or whatever they're facing. And so we understand that we, you know, I know people that are very close to being out on the street too. If they didn't have the support of a family, they would be there. And it's sad, but you've got to stay on your meds, and you've got to you've got to do some of the things and be proactive. So how do you? And I know that talking with somebody in the Polk County Veterans Association, it took some man they worked with for 2 years to come in. And there is a project going over on Douglas too. I forgot about that one, where the Plaza Lanes. It's going to be an affordable housing unit, and there's going to be 8 units for homeless veterans in the first building and 8 in the next building. So again, there's a lot going on, but it takes a long time. You just don't build things overnight. So it's how do we convert and how do we provide the shelter and get people back in line, that get productive and possibly get jobs again and then be able to afford their own. And that's the dignity we want to give them.
How about people who are on the street begging? I will occasionally bring along a gift certificate to a local fast food restaurant and give them that, figuring it'll be better to have it go for food than just giving them money. Are we doing anything about that problem?
Well, they're allowed to ask. We have said that if you're on a median that's 3 feet, it's not to be there, but it's like constant. So, in fact, I was going to take a picture of the sign we posted. They can't be there, and the man's sitting underneath. Again, giving certificates or giving water. There was a group of students at Stowe Elementary that they'd made a bag of water and a granola bar, and it was to give to the people on the street. And I would suggest always only doing that, not giving cash. To give them the water, food, or whatever, because I'm concerned that when I see people out there with their little 2-year-old in the hot sun, problematic. And I do know that we had one woman call me, that's very concerned about somebody in Merle Haight because they had gotten aggressive with her, and she knows them because they lived in her apartment complex. And I'm not saying that's everyone, because there's definitely people that are of need, but I would suggest giving them a gift certificate is a much healthier way to do it.
Howdy. So I'm glad that there's a lot of good conversation about this. And one of the things that you mentioned that I thought was really interesting was that you know folks that without the support of their families would be very close to houselessness themselves. And so one of the things that I love about my work is that I get to work with LGBTQ folks all across our state. And a lot of the people that I work with are people that have been kicked out of their homes. Those families are hostile to them. They kick them out of their homes, often at a very young age. We also see people face increased discrimination in all different parts of life, from education to social services to food pantries. And we're only seeing this get worse with the anti-LGBTQ legislation that's hit our state. Now, you all know in this room that that legislation is not coming from constituents. It's copy-pasted from other parts of the country. So we can all agree that, you know, Iowans, I think, by and large, want to support LGBTQ folks. But the thing that I think is hard, and what I'd love for you to address about this House Assist criminalization ordinance, is that so often when I work one-on-one, like in my role, I get to work one-on-one with houseless LGBTQ folks. You touched on this, which I'm grateful that you did. But they can't access shelters. Those shelters are not safe places for them. They cannot access food pantries. They're not safe places for them. And I don't mean in kind of a general, like, if they don't feel safe. No, these folks are experiencing violence in these spaces. And we know that if they are interacting with the police, no matter how well trained they might be, there is going to be violence there. We've seen this all the way back to the activists that threw bricks at Stonewall. And so the reason that I'm asking about this is because I think that when I'm working with people that are really trying to find the support that they need, especially LGBTQ folks, these services are just not available. And they are going to experience harm if they go to Polk County Jail. They're going to experience harm if they go to a houseless shelter. And, you know, I heard your conversation a little bit about some of the possible temporary housing, but so many of the folks I get to work with just cannot get a grip on any of these services because they're trans, because they're already being discriminated against in their workplaces. And so I really hope... what I'd like for you to do is to address the ways that we're actually going to support LGBTQ folks that are experiencing houselessness, because we do experience houselessness disproportionately, and that's double or triple for folks of color and disabled LGBTQ folks. I don't think that that's been addressed so far, and I'd really like to hear from your perspective how this ordinance fits into how we support and serve those LGBTQ folks.
Well, I think also having the outreach workers too, and I think we need primary health care will probably be the provider of the outreach workers. So we need to get better connected. And with the work you're doing, I don't know how YSS fits into, if you have any, they're supposedly working with the youth. But that's one reason on the pallet homes where they're individual houses. I mean, they're individual dwellings so that they would give you the individuality so that you're not in a group setting. But again, gearing the one, the pallet home that I'm talking about would be for the LGBTQ, especially when you heard about the youth. But it would be tied with family and children, so it's not in, because they don't have the opportunity in most cases. They're not going to, they aren't welcome into a congregate setting, nor should they be. And then we're also hearing there's a lot of seniors. So some of the people that aren't normally seniors who, you know, they're on fixed income, something happens to their house or whatever, and so we're seeing the uptick of seniors. So trying to find the specific and separate out. So would be welcome to have more opportunity to find out how and who is available to help and where we can get better situations for them into housing. So with that, I guess the time's up. Thank you.